How y'all doing? Hey, y'all got to talk to me. Y'all all very smart, and y'all left. You let Charlotte go before me, and so you got to talk to me. It's like in a church, you know. The preacher says, you know, talk back to him so he knows that you're there, right? Otherwise, he keeps preaching and stuff. I'm not going to do that.
No, because I'm going to make him stop.
That's right. And he's reminding me I'm cutting into my time as it is. As Howard said, my name is Tyrone Walker. I'm an advisor to the mayor for faith-based initiatives and director of Ceasefire New Orleans, the intervention arm of NOAL for Life, our comprehensive murder reduction strategy. I just got a quick shameless plug. So I want you to follow me on Twitter. You hear something you like about our program and what we're doing, that's my Twitter handle, and always hashtag CeasefireNOLA. And for our partners that are in here from Larger Cure Violence, I'd love for you guys to follow at Cure Violence as well. So I am a native New Orleanian. I'm born and raised in New Orleans. I'm originally from Desire Housing Project in the Upper Ninth Ward of New Orleans. And I left New Orleans in 2002 to go to college in Vermont, St. Michael's College. And in my senior year of college, Hurricane Katrina happened. And I returned, of course, to New Orleans. I turned down a few jobs in D.C. where I really wanted to go after college, to come back to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, because obviously this was the most important thing that anybody from our city could be doing, especially young professionals. Obviously, it was an opportunity for us and a responsibility I thought we all had to come back, and I'm really excited about having come back. But I was coming back to New Orleans for a very specific reason. Like many New Orleanians and non-New Orleanians who came to our city after the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, we all kind of were more mission-focused than ever. And I came back to New Orleans with one singular goal, and that was to really help our city rebuild and to do something big and bold and around a challenge. Well, I got hooked up some kind of way with Mayor Mitch Landrieu. After he became mayor in 2010 and became a special assistant for a year and a half. Then I joined our innovation delivery team and helped write NOLA for Life. I was a project manager for murder reduction. And we, in the very early days of creating NOLA for Life, we knew that, as Charlotte talked about, that this program, this initiative around solving this long-term problem of that plagued our city for a long term, for a long period of time of violence, we had to do this thing differently. We had to be bold, and the mayor gave us a lot of license to think outside of the box. Before I go any further, there's a person that used to work with us, and I worked very closely with her when she was at the city. And last night when I admit that I was just beginning to really cobble the pieces of this presentation together, she, much of her inspiration and her work came to me. Janetta Presley is her name. She died in September of this year. But Janetta was actually the first director of the Ceasefire New Orleans program and is really responsible for one of the two people, I think, in the city on our team in the city of New Orleans who are responsible for introducing this notion of a public health approach to violence. Her and Dr. Karen DeSalvo, who's Charlotte's predecessor, I remember I would be the person, one of the people in the room who would argue with them a lot whenever they said a fancy word like public health approach and paradigm shifts and all the stuff that y'all say. And I'd say, listen, it's just really simple, right? There's young black males killing young black males. Let's obviously have focused law enforcement, which is a pillar of NOLA for Life. Let's invest more in prevention and intervention programs and the like. And Janetta was one of those people that was more than patient with me and would spend a lot of time, really hours, really explaining the basics of approaching violence from this special lens. She not only graduated from Georgetown, but was very smart and spent a lot of time working on a master's at Tulane School of Public Health. So I wanted to just remember her today and dedicate this presentation to her. So she was very smart, so I hope I don't embarrass her. So as I talk a little bit in the beginning, Ceasefire New Orleans is a public health approach to violence that's modeled after the Cure Violence Initiative designed by a guy, Dr. Gary Slutkin. Dr. Slutkin is an epidemiologist by trade, and spent a lot of time in foreign countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, working on epidemics, stopping the spread of epidemics in those countries. Most notably, he worked in Tanzania and some other African countries to stop the spread of AIDS in those countries. And just like the work that's happening in West Africa now, and unfortunately in America, around Ebola, much of his work centered around this. So Dr. Slutkin spent a lot of time in those places, and he got burnt out with that work, as most people could imagine. And he came back to the States, and he tells a story of coming back to the States and spending some time with friends who made him aware of a growing problem that was in America. And that growing problem was the murders that happened in urban communities between and amongst young black males. Shootings and murders particularly is the leading cause of death for black males between 16 and 25 in America, period. And so one of the things that Dr. Slutkin realized very, very early on is that just like the disease of cholera that he worked on, or AIDS in Africa or other foreign countries, that that not only New Orleans but America in urban cities had an epidemic on its hand as well. And cure violence is a public health approach to violence. As I said, violence is a disease, and what health professionals will tell that told me a lot, and I had to learn after a lot of beating, was that, you know, violence meets every characteristic and definition of a disease, right? It's a disease with behavioral and environmental risk factors, as Charlotte talked about. It has morbidity and mortality, and it arrives in hospitals and leads to death. As I mentioned earlier, violence forms in clusters, just like much of the major epidemics that we see, have seen a whole bunch, particularly in like Ebola that we're facing right now. So whether it is AIDS, cholera, or unfortunately deaths of young black males in America, these diseases have the same characteristics. And some of those characteristics are that they cluster, they spread, and they are transmitted from person to person. And the maps above show clustering of cholera epidemic in Bangladesh and homicides in Chicago just 4 years ago, which Dr. Slutkin just used in a recent presentation I saw in Philadelphia. So that was Bangladesh and Chicago. This is a neighborhood, part of a neighborhood in New Orleans, and this is actually a bad map. If I had a better map, you could see that this is just a small section of a very small neighborhood in the city of New Orleans, but it drives home the further point of violence clustering, right? So shootings and murders cluster in certain neighborhoods in our city, Central City being one of them. And these shootings and killings are spread and transmitted from one person to another due to learned behavior. I want to stop there just for a second, because some people opine often that, and we were guilty of it when we came into office, we used to say something like most politicians and people like me who do this kind of work, the political side of our work, we used to say things that sound well, which is that, you know, the violence and the shootings on the streets of America is unnatural, right? That what these acts that are happening, they don't come natural, right? But the truth is, they are unnatural, but we shouldn't be confused and believe that they're unlearned. They're actually taught. So just like a disease is spreads from one person to another, violent behaviors, particularly resolving conflict with guns, is in fact a learned behavior. No one's born taking that approach. It's no accident. So to reduce shootings and killings in New Orleans, particularly through ceasefire, we do a few things. We use data to determine where to focus and who to engage. We intervene and mediate conflicts to stop the spread of the violence. And we work to isolate the problem, provide intensive care or case management, and then we work to change behaviors. So we do that a few ways. So first, just like any ceasefire or cure violence site anywhere in America or in the world, we have what's called violence interrupters. And these are credible messengers in the community who are from the communities that they work and who work specifically on the street. These violence interrupters are not just random guys that you pick on the street, pick from off the street that has a bad background and they decided one day that they wanted to go interrupt a conflict. No. These are highly trained individuals that that get a lot of public health training. These violence interrupters are engaging high-risk youth to stop, again, the transmission of violence through individual, group, and community-level intervention. Close. So, outreach workers. These guys are members of our team who work to provide case management for these young men that we work with. So after the violence interrupters are intervening and mediating conflicts, our outreach workers are providing long-term case management for individuals to really change behaviors. And I know Howard's going to kick me, but I want to stop here for a second to drive home a big point. We have a rule in Ceasefire New Orleans that says that if these young men don't dream, they don't pass go and they don't collect $200. The reason why that's important, when we were putting together NOLA for Life, and I did a bunch of focus groups, with whether it was officers or parents or social workers, we did one with young black males between 16 and 25 because the data said those are the ones that were likely to shoot or be shot. And so we did a group with them, and I asked them one question. I asked them, tell me what your dream is. Tell me what you want to be. And only one person out of a group of 25 could give me the answer to that question. And that really perplexed me, and I was a little bit embarrassed because I'm from some of the neighborhoods that they're from. But one of the things I learned is that if a young person doesn't dream, they won't have hope. And somebody that doesn't dream and don't have hope won't value their life, and they absolutely won't value your life either. So while we can have all the programs in the world, we can have all the resources that we want, we can have as many job opportunities that we want, right? If these young men don't start to dream, don't start to set goals and priorities for themselves, we're not going to be successful. So that's a big priority for us. Ceasefire uses a public health approach that uses public education, right? So it's not good enough just for us to work and provide interventions and mediations with the individuals that are involved. It's not just good enough to provide case management for the young people that need it the most. It's also important for us to be changing norms. We have got to change behaviors, right? So any good public education campaign is one that does a few things. So think of anti-smoking campaign. Think of campaigns like Buckle Up campaigns that is designed to change behaviors, right? So these are young men that are from the neighborhoods that we work. We worked with, got technical assistance from Cure Violence team to start a campaign called You Have Influence, Use It. This is phase one of it that was designed to give back to the young men that are from these communities their images and their words, and give them back the actions that we want them to use if they're involved in conflicts. So this is one of those things. Second phase of it, we use young ladies, right? So young ladies are growingly involved in conflicts in these neighborhoods, right? So we said, listen, why don't we give back to these young people the type of actions that we want them to be involved in the midst of shootings and conflict. So then what we're trying to do often is we're trying to change the larger community norms, right? And we do that by mobilizing the larger community. It is not good enough, again, to focus on the young men and the young women that's involved in the conflict. Remember, they've got to learn that from somebody else, and they're learning it from the community. But oftentimes what we learn is the community does not have a space or the support, right, to learn and to change new norms, right? So what we try to do in Ceasefire New Orleans is provide the space and the support for community members to one, think through ways that they can resolve conflicts in their communities, and then more importantly, come up with new protective factors. So as I wrap up, I want to walk through quickly with you our hospital crisis intervention team, because that's more related to why you're here, right? So hospital crisis intervention team is something that we're excited about. So Ceasefire New Orleans started in April 2012. The hospital crisis intervention team started in October 2013, and it allows us to respond to shooting incidents that happen anywhere in the city with youth between 16 and 25. It's funded by the Kellogg Foundation, a very generous grant from the Kellogg Foundation. Our partners include, obviously, the city's health department, the Urban League of Greater New Orleans, and most importantly, the Interim LSU Hospital, which is the state's only Trauma 1 center. And basically what happens is if a young person between 16 and 25 is shot anywhere in the city of New Orleans, our ceasefire staff is notified, right? They go to the hospital, get a write-up on the incident, and they then go to the bedside of the victim. And they're in the trauma room, or they're in the waiting area where the victim's families or friends are. The reason why this partnership and this opportunity is so important to prevent and intervene in conflicts is because it gives us a golden hour or golden moment. Now, golden moments are interesting. That time is a time wherein individuals, both victims and perpetrators, are open to thinking anew about conflicts or their situation, right? It is a time of high emotions, right, where things can further spiral out of control. So our violence interrupters and outreach workers are partnering with the nurses and the surgeons and the trauma unit at ILH, right, to provide immediate intervention. And we believe that because we're providing that immediate intervention at those very critical moments, that it allows for us to get more likely to get some of those young people to come onto our caseload to get further support and care. The last piece on this, I've talked a lot about why that helps us reduce shootings and killings, right? Intervening in conflicts, providing the support for those individuals. But from a public health standpoint, the doctors and the nurses in the trauma center, they'd say, look, the benefit to us is that your case management, your intensive support for the individuals during those critical moments allows for two things to happen. Number one, it allows for an increased likelihood that those young people will recover faster. So our case management follows up with them to make sure they're coming back to the hospital to get the care for their wounds and the like. And the last thing that it provides is it gives them as an opportunity to make sure that it reduces the likelihood for re-injury. So Howard's really killing me. And the last thing I got, very, very last thing, because this is the last slide, is that I'd be foolish to walk away from this and to not tell you two last things. Number one, Ceasefire New Orleans is working. At the end of 1 year going, just like all of NOLA for Life, we've seen dramatic reductions in both shootings and killings. And our central city target have reduced murders by 55%. And our central city target have reduced shootings by 31%. And year to date, we're sustaining those reductions in the most violent neighborhoods in the city. We've provided over 200 responses for youth that have been shot between 16 and 25 since we launched, thanks to the Kellogg Foundation. And then the last thing I'll tell you is, I know, really the last thing, is that we really do need more people, as Charlotte's talked about, like yourselves, advocating for this new and different approach to resolving or reducing violence in our communities. We have absolutely tried locking up everybody and throwing away the key. We've tried that already, right? And the only way that we're going to see further reductions in violent crime in our communities while improving protective factors for people that are very high risk is by making sure that we have a diverse and a comprehensive way to tackle the problem. So thank you guys very much.